First, let me pay my respects to the traditional owners, the Noongar people, and my respects to all traditional owners across Australia. Thank you very much to CEDA, Tom Baddeley, and to Murdoch, and to the sponsors of today's event for inviting me to come over for what will be a fast-paced 20-minute presentation, and Andrew is on notice to chink the glass because I could be carried away and spend too much time. And out of respect for my follow-on speakers, I will be stopped. It's a great pleasure to be back here in Perth. What I want to do this morning is just pick up four particular points, and perhaps then we can come back to some of these in the discussion and the panel time. The reasons for investment, I'm going to draw on the Starting Strong 2 report and our work in the OECD primarily for this presentation. The range and scope of investments across the OECD, birth to three as a special issue, and the targeted versus universal policy issues and research. So they're my four motifs, if you like. Just looking, first of all, at the case for public investment, there's a huge array of reports. Three or four of those I've been engaged with in different ways, but a huge array of reports that have come out internationally in the last 3 years. Every country, if you take UNESCO and the OECD's work, almost every country on the planet's been reviewed in terms of its policy and provision in early childhood in the last 4-5 years. And just that alone suggests that optimal development produces maximum gain to individuals and society, whether it's through pro-social behaviour, skilling or savings in negative behaviours. This early childhood area is the space that's in focus. Emissions in the early years result in higher costs over time to the public through deeper problems that are harder to alleviate. In the short term, it's about readiness in many countries, readiness for school and transitions. Not in all countries, but it is in some cases. And adeptness in making transitions. But the quality of program is the critical element there, and that's often forgotten in that debate and discussion and in that funding process. And the fourth area in terms of economics as to the case for public investment might surprise some here, but it's about alleviating market failure. This is why government is involved. There is little reason if you look at economic theory, there is little reason for parents to choose high price, high quality program because they don't get the direct, immediate benefit. It's transferred benefits later to society. And therefore, it's at the heart of a case why there should be public investment in this area. Okay. I'll come back to that one if we need to discuss it later. Why did the OECD conduct a thematic review? The government conceptualises services for young children as important for lifelong learning. That's been the flavour of the focus since about 1995. For economic reasons was the second part of their argument. Early childhood is seen as a producer of social, human and identity capital, setting the foundations of knowledge, skills and competencies and personal attributes that allow people to contribute to their own personal and social well-being, as well as to that of the economy or their economy. What process did we use? We looked at We effectively covered these 20 countries. In fact, it was 21 countries because there's Flemish Belgium and French Belgium, and they had two separate reviews. But all of these countries chose to take part. They prepared a background report. There was an OECD expert team and a rapporteur assigned, and that was 20 different teams assigned for each of these country reviews. And country visits and investigations took place in depth following a very detailed analysis of the background report, and then the team would go in. I was rapporteur for the Republic of South Korea, and I was engaged very actively in the Austrian review in particular. A country note was developed, is written then by the rapporteur. The data are validated by the government, who cannot prohibit the synthesis and the findings. They must validate the data, the evidence, so that there is factually correct material there, but effectively it is to the OECD expert team to say what they say, about each of the findings. So, and starting from two, the report is a meta-analysis of the 20 countries' reports, and we, in addition, put through an array of other countries' evidence, because you know there are 30 countries, member countries in the OECD. We have data we could pull from other parts of the picture, and so we put those in the report where we could. What I want to do is just say, in terms of the reasons for investment, we clustered the why countries across the OECD invest into three broad reasons clusters. The first one is about improving life chances. The long reach of early childhood education and care on human capital development is a major reason why countries invest. The non-economic returns to learning are just as important for many countries' investments. It's not only about economic returns. For enhanced personal well-being, for greater social cohesion, this is very underplayed in our country, perhaps, in relation to the capacity of early childhood education and care provision to be the foundation for building social cohesion. It's seen by many as at least as important as the impact of labour market earnings and economic growth. Good health is part of human capital, and that's very much a part of this motif. In this group, the Nordics translate this into a strong focus on equality and democracy. So their reasoning for very high, the top levels of investment, fit under this reasoning category. Continental Europe, if you look at Austria, perhaps Villach in particular, in the municipality of Carinthia, down over near the Italian border, they see the investment as a system to enter and integrate language and ethnic groups. The Slovenians, the Croatians, the Albanians, the Italians, the Austrians and the Germans are all in that area in Villach. And this is a major focus of their orientation around social cohesion. And I'll digress for a second to North Korea. I worked with UNESCO and went into North Korea in 2006 to consider the government there. And when you look at life chances or their reasoning, this is translated into the establishment of the citizen child. A child is a child of the state in North Korea. The balance of family to state is not there. We talk about this as a partnership, and it's an interesting case consideration when you think about how we take for granted the role of family in early childhood education. But it certainly indicates what states see as very important when you go to a totalitarian state. In Australia, South Korea and the UK, but less so in the UK, and in the USA, this cluster is perhaps most strongly argued as relevant to leading into school. It's not, I think, the other elements that are argued by other countries in terms of improving life chances. Here we conceptualise it as leading into school. The second cluster set of reasons why countries invest relate directly to improving the economy. All countries are moving to assist the influx of women into the paid labour market for economic, gender and equality reasons, all three. Ageing Western post-industrial economies are trying to maximise their workforce participation and minimise the number of citizens outside the paid workforce dependent for their economic well-being. Being dependent is considered to be a real concern for governments in this time. There are issues and contradictions here, and they relate to the mix of views about child rearing, motherhood, maternalist child and family policies, as well as uncounted supply of resources and support to the economy by family units and carers of children, the aged and the disabled. For the state, a growing issue is dependency and stressed family functioning. But to a large degree, those motifs fit under this focusing on improving the economy. On this reasoning, there's a substantial paid parental leave policies in all countries except Australia and the US. These are mostly funded by Social Security at a total cost of less than 1% of GDP. I haven't recalced all my figures since the meltdown. I'm sorry. I think it's too hard. And that's another point for us to talk about later, perhaps. Except in Finland and Sweden, where it's a higher percentage of GDP that is spent on paid parental leave. In Portugal, for example, 86% of the total female employment of mothers in this age were full-time in 2004. Nearly 80% of the 25 to 34 year olds in Portugal, 25 to 34 year old women in Portugal were in full-time employment. And so policies have to get in line with that, and the economies were calling and needing for that. So very good paid parental leave and support was very much part of that. Part-time employment raises other issues. Now, this will be controversial in depending on which layer of reasoning you put forward, but the long-reach equality issues pose issues for part-time employment in terms of pensions and life course earnings for women. So some of these matters come into the fray in terms of improving the economy. The third reason, alleviating poverty and disadvantage, probably the most spoken about reason in Australia, dare I say, and why I want to come to universal and targeted provision at the end of this presentation. Child poverty is determined by several factors: parent underemployment, income inequalities, insufficient social transfer payments, lack of affordable quality childcare. Lone parents, low income families are particularly vulnerable. Child poverty rates increased in 17 of the 24 countries for which data were available when we were doing this review in the OECD. Australian child income, the child income poverty rate in 2007 was 11.6%. Australian working age households with children with no employed parent was 9.5%. I've stayed with the OECD figures from 2006 for this presentation purely to be online in terms of all of the figures I'm presenting, rather than updating a few that were available. Australia invests most in the single breadwinner, dependent spouse, two children family type. The tax wedge evidence is a low 16% for this group on average earnings versus 28% for singles. So our policy settings are very clearly fixed in a maternalist focus around social policy provision in this country, and that's come since World War II, effectively. That's not in itself, we're not unique in that across the OECD. Maternalism has been a strong focus since World War II, and these things are slow to change. But it is the 21st century, and there are all these other reasons for focusing in early childhood. Policy ranges from comprehensive early childhood programs to targeted interventions in regard to alleviating poverty and disadvantage. Children from low SES families are less likely statistically to develop the same level of skills and intellectual capital as children in families rating higher SES. See Leon Feinstein's work, which I'll cite later. He found 13% difference in cognitive development was apparent at 22 months between children in high and low SES British households. 22 months, 13% difference. What's that saying? Mixed groupings help. In the USA, Jean Brooks Gunn found high-quality centre-based programs increased school-related achievements with the strongest effects for children in poverty with low-education parents. The positive benefits continue at least into late primary and high school. Although there were smaller effects as the time lapses increase, programs continuing into primary do appear to have the most sustained long-term benefits. And again, there's some good evidence about sustainability coming up, and it all comes back to the quality of the program and whether or not it's a high enough quality program not to wash out. And I'd love to speak a little more about that, but I'll go on. The range and scope of investments. Let's just have a look at, in this issue, what I'm suggesting here is that the range and the scope of investments in any country set the access conditions for children in the birth to five range in particular. Early childhood programs, for some examples, are free from 30 months in Belgium and France, from 36 months in Austria, Czech Republic, Hungary, Germany, Italy, most of Norway and some of the UK, from 48 months in Ireland, Netherlands, and from 60 months in Australia, Canada, Korea, Mexico and the US. These are average national figures, and that's talking about where you get statutory universal access for children. Mexico legislated in 2004 to mandate preschool from 36 months because of the need to deal with the huge population of very young children in that country, and they've been massively working. By 2009, their anticipation was to get there. I haven't seen where their figures are right now. In the Nordics, the program must be provided at the end of parental leave. There are some fees, but a program is required, statutorily provided. In Canada and the USA, mostly access is half-time, half-day type term time access. That makes a big difference if you've got mixed purposes for investing in this area and you're wanting to support labour market and the economy, because part-time mixed short-term access still poses the family work-life balance and the working situation. Across less than 4 years, enrollment growth is very rapid. When you're looking at the 3 to 4 year age range across the US, there's huge increases in the pre-K in the majority of states. If you look in Canada, in Quebec alone, Quebec alone accounted for almost all of the increase in regulated places in Canada between 1998 and 2005. Just one municipality. We often go to Canada or cite Canada as a place we should be learning from. If you go read the OECD report, you'd have quite a different opinion. It is a federated country, however, and so much of what's cited comes from only small parts of Canada. Australia, at 4 years, in average, the access is around 83%. At 3 years of age, the average access is about 17%. It drops dramatically. At five, it's listed as 9.2%, but that relates to children being in school and not being in this particular count. That's our change point. But one of the things about OECD figures and access, which I will come back to as well, is that we have certain categories, certain criteria to meet the International Standard Education Classification Level 0, which is preschool. There have got to be certain standards in place to be able to count a program as part of the program that children access. Otherwise, it's not counted. It's insufficient quality. Australia drops out a lot of its access on the fact that it's not good enough. In Portugal, coverage went from 57 to 72% for everybody over 36 months between 96 and 99. In Germany, there are big differences between the East and the West, but there's 90% access. In Korea, the right to free kindergarten is certainly there, but it's about 50% of children who get in, and they've been massively working on that since 2004. So in that sense, it's just to put you in the picture about where we might fit in that world. So I'll move to the issue about birth to three. The policies are misaligned with the science. Our focus, I've just talked about access. Our access is, we're talking 4 and 5 year olds at best. And yet, you look at where this investment, this focus on brain growth and public investment by child age from the US, just indicates the red line plotting cumulative public investment and the blue line focusing on brain growth. The rise of neuroscience evidence is, and the lag of policy action in Australia is dramatic. Community constructions of child learning, motherhood may prevent action in this area. We have to have some discussion about this. Employer constructions of workplaces, their views that costs rest with parents, in particularly mothers, when they are also to children and the economy, costs of not working in this area. We have to have, these are issues in Australia. If you look at examples of how traditions certainly influence ECEC investment in the different countries at the birth to three level, this looks at state support for under threes provision, whether it's high or low, against state support for the provision of parental leave. It's only the Nordic countries that actually do both, high state support for under threes and high state support for parental leave. And we fit in the box neoliberal economies, so we clearly have a very strong maternalist approach to this. And, you know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but the consequences are really quite dire, and it is time we rethought that. The Australian situation, from starting strong figures, these on our classification definitions, legal entitlement to a free program is at 5 or 6 years of age, long past this birth to three focus. At 1 to 2 years, 26.3%, these are the percentages of children gaining access. And then if you combine that with quality, where we look at qualifications, less than 60% of early childhood contact staff hold any formal qualification whatsoever. 40% today, that hasn't changed, 40% of contact staff with children in the birth to five in childcare services have no qualification, no formal qualification, not a certificate. And many of our staff have, they have, because you look at contact staff, these OECD requires particular standards to look across. Just this one, employment rates of the mother with children under three, we're in the middle there. We really looked at this with in terms of child access rates to licensed services. Where you've got very much higher employment rates of women with children under three and a very strong drop away in terms of services, licensed childcare services or whatever for the children, the question is, where are the children? What kind of program? What learning and development is happening? Many of them may be with grandparents having a wonderful experience. Many won't be. Many will be in all kinds of unregulated and ad hoc provision. Let's look at our funding. Australia fits in relation to the funding at a very low ebb. We have 0.4% of GDP. That's putting everything together. Childcare, preschool, state and federal inputs. That's for birth to six-year-olds. We fit in at a very low stage. If you take, I won't go any further into the funding, but really the question lots of people want to know is, well, how much does it cost for a high-quality early childhood program? There is such a mix of research on this, and it's very patchy. We have no real evidence. So what we pulled for the OECD was what had been done and where the top countries were. Okay. And you can see 4,000 to 6,000 for a part-time US dollars. This is 8,000 to 12,000 for full-time. Going past, just to starting engagement again, high and low SES. The change of trajectory for children is dramatic, depending on what kind of intervention takes place. Perry High Scope, I won't go into. We did an extrapolation that indicates. We would get huge benefit if we put some investment in. And then the Queensland study, which these pictures illustrate, that's my last slide, Andrew. The Queensland study, just with 2,000 children almost, indicated that it's not every kind of early childhood program that makes a difference, including those with four-year trained preschool teachers. Some of them actually flatline or take some children backwards. So we do have to do a lot more work in this area. Thank you.